for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. My name is Anna.
And I'm Sam.
Wow. What an episode, Sam.
What an episode.
What are we talking about this week?
We've got Andor Season 1, Episode 9, Nobody's Listening! Exclamation mark.
Yeah, the exclamation point is quite a flourish, quite a happy-go-lucky little embellishment on a grim piece of media.
I was reading the AV Club review of this when it came out, and they said, don't let the jaunty exclamation mark fool you.
Wow. Truer words have never been spoken. So we open Nobody's Listening on, I'm going to call it the F plot for Ferrix, but also the F plot because Deidre Miro is getting a big fat F from me this week. Never has the girl code been betrayed so hard as in this episode.
So what's going on?
In the hotel on Ferrix, where the imps are set up, Deidre Miro is grilling Bix Colleen for information. She's been taken hostage, basically. She's threatening to interrogate Bix with this new tactic that the Empire has devised from massacring an entire sentient species and then using the audio files as auditory torture. Mm-hmm. It is that dark.
So importantly, she also does some great exposition of what's going on and what she's learned. And she basically figures out that Bix has met the buyer 6 times. The buyer is Axis, is Luthen. And that Bix is the only person to have ever used this radio to communicate with the buyer. So she knows that Bix is the point of contact, and she wants to know when Cassian Andor was last year and if Cassian Andor knows the buyer.
Yeah, so Miro has figured out a lot, but she doesn't know anything about Luthen. And that's basically the information that Bix refuses to give up under torture. Mm-hmm. She's tortured into incomprehension. She gives Miro almost everything. Miro brings it back to the ISB. So they've made some progress, but they don't know where Cassian is. They don't know who Luthen is. And so they're at a bit of a stalemate until they accidentally capture a rebel pilot who was going to work with Anton Krieger.
Yeah, so this pilot was just randomly captured, and they did it by noticing that he had like an illegal Imperial transponder that was one of the ones that was missing that they wouldn't have found except that Deidre has collected all of this stolen equipment.
That's also how Deidre found Pac, mm-hmm. who then gives up Bix. She traced a piece of equipment to him that presumably Kleia gave him at like a rebel recruitment event 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So Miro's horrifying net across the galaxy is working. Mm-hmm. They interrogate the rebel pilot the same way that they interrogate Bix. Now they know Krieger's plan for Spellhouse, which mm-hmm. is another Imperial garrison, I guess. And Miro comes up with a truly dastardly plan. They're going to kill the pilot. They're going to mess up his ship. They're going to make it look like it was an accident. They're going to drift it into space traffic outside of Kafreen, where the pilot was headed. And then they're going to let the rebels tow it back to safety at their headquarters and then probably bomb the headquarters and capture everybody or kill them.
Or do something, yeah.
So Deidre Miro, my friends, is evil. It makes me sick that I put her on Baywatch. I'm sick. I'm nauseous. I hate it so much.
She's doing a really good job at her job.
So apart from Miro being the most competent, dastardly devil in this series, we also get I'm going to call it the MV plot, the Mon Mothma-Vell plot. MV is so close to MVP. They don't quite get there this week. But we find out that Mon Mothma's cousin, when she comes to visit is none other than Vel.
Yep. So the spoiled little rich girl comment that Cinta gave last week actually turns out to be prescient because Vel is a spoiled little rich girl.
Well, kind of. She's grown past that. But Mon has no idea that she was involved in Aldani. She has no idea where Vel has been for 6 months. And she's like, you need to lay low, just be a spoiled little rich girl, go back home to Chandrila, and let things quiet down. Mm-hmm. And Vel is like, yeah, I could probably do that. Meanwhile, Mon meets with her old flame, Tecoma.
Old flame. Like, Leda, the Mothma's lampshade that Leda's like, oh, it's your old boyfriend. And Perrin's like, emphasis on old. And Mon Mothma's like, we were in grade school. Perrin, we got married at 15. I don't have a list of ex-boyfriends.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
I just want Mon to have, like, a cadre of lovers on the side, and she just does not.
Well, Vel actually talks about that because Mon Mothma reveals that she's meeting with Tay, and Vel is like, is it just business? And Mon Mothma's like,
or is it personal?
And Mothma's like, do I look like I have time for that?
Yeah, fair. She meets with Tay because she needs to launder the 400,000 credits for the rebellion. Mm-hmm. Although there's an audit going on, things are getting really tricky financially. There's some classic Star Wars banking dialogue. Mon essentially needs to meet with a space gangster.
Yeah.
Whose name is Davos Skuldan. And Mon is horrified because he is a criminal. He's a thug. He's a loan shark. But she doesn't immediately say no.
She doesn't immediately say no.
Okay, finally, we cut to the A plot for Cassian Andor. A sounds so optimistic for what's going on here, Sam. You were right. Cassian has not bought in to the Imperial Factory facility of Narkeena 5. He is watching. He is waiting. He is finding allies. He's working on a plan to get out. But things are getting really weird on Narkeena 5.
Importantly, he's also sighing on something in the bathroom.
Yeah, he takes his bathroom break once a day and takes a metal file and like starts sawing away at the plumbing. Mm-hmm. So it's the beginnings of a plan. Unfortunately, his work on this is interrupted because one of his table mates, Ulaf, the really elderly, frail one, is starting to get very spacey and very strange. Mm-hmm. And he's got 40 days left on his sentence. And so the whole table is coming together to like pitch in and help him out. They're just trying to get him through the next 40 days so he can be released.
We've also got an important bit of dialogue here, which leads to the title, because Melshi and Kino and Cassian are sitting there, and Cassian's like, why are you afraid of talking about escape to Kino? How many guards are there on each level? You can tell me. And Kino's like, what? You think they're not listening? And Andor says, nobody's listening. They don't care about us. What are they supposed to do? All they have to do is turn on the floor twice a day and we're kept in order. We keep ourselves in order. Nobody's listening.
It is a self-perpetuating system. Things get even weirder as they file towards their bunks for the day. So there's this one moment every day when all of the glass pipes of the different floors can kind of see each other walking by. And people hand signal to try to tell each other rumors. And there's this rumor that something crazy happened on the second floor. It sounds like all 98 men were fried and killed all at once.
It's 100 because the floor managers, yeah.
That's true. They get real proof when Ulaf, the elderly frail one, has a massive stroke on the shift floor. So they call up the med tech. He comes up. He administers a lethal dose of Star Wars morphine because there's nothing he can do.
And the med tech also is a prisoner as well.
He is. And that's when they learn what happened on the second level because the med tech tells them. A prisoner from the fourth floor was released from his sentence and immediately put back on level 2. Mm-hmm. And all of the prisoners found out and revolted, and they killed everybody. And so now, instead of ever releasing prisoners, it sounds like you finish your sentence and they kill you.
Or they move you to a different level. So I think what actually happened here is that you start at the lowest level and you move your way up, presumably doing less and less impactful work. because now you know you're in a rat race. And in this case, someone was released from two, or someone was released and went down a level, and they had to, they ended up killing him. But it's a little unclear, but that's the basic gist of it, is that the message gets out that you are never actually released from this prison.
So the whole episode, as Cassian has been prodding at Kino, his foreman, he's like, how many guards are on each level? And hearing this news seems to finally break Kino. And Cassian says, how many guards on each level? And Kino says, never more than 12. And the episode fades to black with potentially a prison break on the horizon.
Yeah. So we've got torture. We've got a deeply, horribly corrupt killing labor camp. We've got Mon Mothma and her terrible family. What do you want to talk about?
Oh my gosh. I keep thinking about whether or not this is the most evil we've seen the Empire.
Oh, we missed the Cyril plot.
Oh my God, Cyril might be in love with Miro.
I think he's in love with her, like, raging, throbbing zealotry for the Empire. He is such a useless idiot.
Do you want to talk about evil, or do you want to talk about Cyril Karn's love plot? Because both are tantalizing.
So there's a great scene. Cyril's sitting there with Edie, and she's like, you weren't home last night. And he's like, I've been given a promotion at work. And she's like, oh, I'm so proud of our labor together. She's just the worst.
And I thought he was making it up to get her off of his back. And then it turns out he actually did get a promotion.
But he's also spending, he doesn't have to work any more hours. He's been spending it waiting in the foyer of the ISB building, waiting to see Deidre Miro so he can pull her aside and be like, I've been straight up stalking you because I wanted to thank you for this job. And I share your zealous hatred of Cassian Andor.
When you stood over me in that interrogation chamber, I realized that there's justice and beauty in the world. I love the way you torture innocent civilians. Oh, I've got such a hard-on for your maniacal gleam in your beady little eyes.
And she's like, this is a terrible interaction.
Because, okay, first of all, it is so deeply inappropriate to wait for a woman outside of her place of work that she has to go to every day, blah, blah, blah. The thing is that Miro casts off this, like, veil of unflappable competence that she has at work. Mm-hmm. And when she stands in front of Bix, she's like a different creature. She is evil.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that I care that Cyril is making her uncomfortable outside of work. I wish more people were making Miro uncomfortable at work. She's all of a sudden having way too easy of a time and having way too much fun.
Well, speaking of people who are uncomfortable at work, Mon Mothma also was uncomfortable at work. She got booed in her starting Senate thing where she's like, the PORD legislation is way overreaching and she's getting booed by the rest of the Senate.
So that kind of made me think, I think Nobody's Listening was the perfect title for this episode because it kind of applies to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely nobody is listening to Mon Mothma in the Senate.
Yeah.
We get kind of a sneak preview of how the Senate works in this iteration. You have a light on your little platform that you can use to soar out into the middle of the foyer. Mm-hmm. And when you disapprove of what the speaker is saying, you turn your light off. Mm-hmm. So Mon is trying to give this speech about how they're on a slippery slope to the chancellor having untouchable amounts of power, and people just keep turning their lights off. And what she's trying to do is stop what's happening on Narkina 5.
Yeah. And so nobody's listening to her. And then we get to her family life. And it's really funny because apparently Val, who's like, hey, I just rolled into town. And Mon Mothma's like, where have you been? And she's like, traveling. Did he put you up to this? Who are you talking about?
She's so good.
And then Perrin's like, ah, yes, you're going back to Chandrila for the pilgrimage. You're going to find a husband. And Mon Mothma's just like snidely sipping her drink because she's like, no and no.
So, okay. We have not yet talked about Val and Cinta being lovers. There was just never time. So I feel like I haven't really earned the right to be outraged at the way that Perrin is speaking to Vel, except the way that Perrin is speaking to Vel made me want to do a murder.
He's like, oh yeah, at your age, it'd be more of a widower. And like, that's such a...
Perrin!
I know.
My dude!
He's just real mean.
It's just like... Vel and Cinta have such a complex thing going on.
It's just toxic.
We didn't really talk about this last week, and now we kind of have an opportunity. Cinta's like, Vel, you love me because I'm mean to you. I show you a mirror of all the worst parts of yourself that you need to fix. And Cinta never says she loves Vel back.
No, Cinta's like, I just love killing stormtroopers. I just love killing. I just love blowing stuff up.
There's also this line that she says that Vel repeats in this episode, which is that, I told you from the beginning, the cause always comes first. Mm-hmm. We get the crumbs that are left.
So Cinta says that to Vel, and then Vel says that to her cousin, Mon Mothma.
Which is so, I think that's so correct because it's not a thing that you say to someone that you love all the way. Like, I would never say that to you, mm-hmm. Sam. I would say that to someone that I tolerated, and I would use it as a weapon. And Cinta uses it as a weapon to push Vel away, and then Vel uses it as a weapon to push Mon away.
And it's because they do have those close binds that predate, or I guess more emotionally, sexually connect these people beyond their rebellion ties. But if someone's like your rebellion battle sibling, then you're like, cool, yeah. I mean, like, the rebellion comes first and then we're bros afterwards, right? And that's like a much more relatable thing than being a lover or a cousin of someone in a rebellion.
Yeah, I guess I used lover for Vel and Cinta because, like, normally I would say they were girlfriends. But I don't know that Cinta's a girlfriend. She's got so much armor up mm-hmm. when it comes to Vel.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very really, so this is all going back to the last episode, but because we don't see Cinta, we don't see Luthen in this episode or Clea, but Cinta's great.
Cinta's great. Well. Cinta, this situation just reminds me of one of our dear friends who, she's a Pisces, if this matters to you. And she'll tell you, she's like, I have been in love with and dating people. And if you had asked those people, they would not say that they were my boyfriend. Like, she will make up these imaginary love relationships in her mind with acquaintances. And I'm like, Vel, honey, I don't know if Cinta's the one for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Back on this, because so there's a great example of nobody listening.
Ooh.
In the whole Mothma family. No one's listening. Vel is not listening to the red flags that Cinta's putting off. Mon Mothma is listening to Vel, but she wants more information than Vel is willing to give her. And then, you know, Perrin's like, I just flagrantly ignore anything that goes against the social customs.
Definitely no one is listening to Bix scream as she's being tortured.
There are, okay, one could have been given an outline of this script that contains rebel pilot captured by ISB and needs to be like given a fake death so that the rebel cell doesn't gain it. We need to torture this person to get all the information they need. We need to have an entire floor of a prison facility killed. And that person would J.J. Abrams it up and be like, here's 900 people getting electrocuted. Pew, 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 here's like a starfighter getting shot down by TIE fighters. Here's a woman screaming on the rack. None of that happened. The torture scene consists...
is a close-up of Bix's eyes.
And she puts on a noise-canceling headset, and then 6 seconds later, she's screaming.
And just insensate on a mattress.
And that's it, and it's great.
It's just the way that Andor... You told me this a million years ago, and I was like, okay, Sam, whatever. You were like, Andor is people talking tensely in a room. and you're on the edge of your seat and your stomach's in knots the entire time.
Yeah.
I'm like, whatever, Sam. And then I saw it. I saw it.
It's just people talking in rooms.
It is Imperial agents smiling gently at you as they exposit about the genocide of an entire species and very cordially putting noise-canceling headphones on your head and saying, if your muscles lose the ability to function, try to flop your head from side to side so I know to take the headphones off.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
The. I can't finish that sentence on this podcast.
You could bleep it out. You're editing. But for real, it's great what they're able to do. And one of the great things about it is that it lets you really stretch your budget.
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
Gave them plenty of money to furnish Mon Mothma's embassy house.
I mean, not really. It's just a big white soundstage with like a beautiful table. I mean, you can make all that up pretty quickly. The art, everything. I mean, it's very austere.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing with, Luthen's shop front. That's just like, here's a bunch of like extras from costumes. In the Narkina 5 facility, so Andor goes to the bathroom and then he comes back when a new man is coming on the floor.
To replace Vimos, who killed himself.
Yep. And so Andor is watching and he's sitting next to this other guy and he's like, see, no boots. He's holding onto the railing. That means that the elevator isn't charged. And the guy's like, yeah, nothing that moves is deadly. And so they've been thinking about this whole time in these quiet conversations that they just don't get to have. But the implication is that we've seen them all off screen. And then budget-wise, all they have to do is be like, paint this room white and put a little tiny lift in it, easy peasy.
Yeah.
And that's the whole set. It's great.
And it looks so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept thinking about parallels to other situations like this that we've seen in Star Wars so far.
Mm-hmm.
Because this episode had a lot of reflections of other things we've seen just at like new heights of horror. So we've seen characters in prison before.
Yeah.
We've seen Cad Bane. We've seen Zero the Hutt. We've seen Obi-Wan Kenobi as Racco Hardeen.
We've seen Kanan Jarrus.
We have.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Imprisoned and tortured.
We've seen torture too. In the Clone Wars, I feel like Anakin force interrogated somebody.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
Including Newt Gunray in the Newt Gunray captured arc.
Yeah.
But then also we've seen, it's kind of the original, there's a torture scene in the original trilogy in A New Hope.
Oh, okay.
So it's part and parcel with the Star Wars universe is that torture is part of it.
Yeah, well, we've seen a lot of electroshock torture too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, so we've seen prison, we've seen prison breaks, we've seen interrogation, and we've seen torture. And none of it was as visceral as what we see this episode.
And see, that's what I guess I was getting at earlier with when you make this all happen off screen and the information that the actors are receiving, they're reacting to. They're like, but we don't know anything. What are we supposed to do? And then the way Kino changes his mind from going like, I'll never tell you, I only have 212 days left on my sentence to never more than 12. That shows such depth.
Yeah.
And what's actually going on in our heads is that this torture is so much worse than we could possibly imagine.
Mm.
That anything, the way this pilot was captured was so much more tense than anything we could possibly imagine.
We don't even know what he looks like.
It doesn't matter. It's great.
Yeah. I feel like with Kino, we kind of saw little cracks in his armor all episode. And then it sort of culminated in his final break with Cassian.
Mm-hmm.
Because all episode, Cassian is like poking at him and prodding at him. And things are getting really shifty. And Kino had put this little bubble around himself where he's like, I have 217 days left. I'm the foreman. I don't care what's going on. I don't care about breaking out. I just need to survive less than a year until I'm out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the prisoners start hand signaling and finding out what happened on level 2. And Kino barges over. And he's like, it takes a week to get a message up here. You have no idea what they're saying. And it's like, oh, he's snapping back to before he was foreman. He remembers what it was like to just be another guy on the floor.
He does. And he punches Melshi hard when he starts learning this information. When they hear, so there's two scenes, there's several scenes in the tubes. One of them, the power goes out. And then the next one, the night shift is like, you didn't hear? Oh, no, they didn't hear. And Kino goes up and talks to the other foreman. He's like, what's going on? And it's like, you got to keep your guys in line. And Kino, this is stressing Kino out. So he punches Melshi and Cassian pulls him apart. It's like, you got to hold it together.
We got to pretend like we have no idea what's going on.
Yes, the less they know we know, the better.
And Kino looks at Cassian in a whole new light.
Because he realizes, he's like, oh, Cassian actually is the, if anyone is going to stage a prison break, it's going to be Cassian.
And it's crazy, right? Because Cassian has done such a good job of playing dumb.
Yeah.
He has seemed like an idiot. They're like, this guy rolls in and doesn't know what the PORD is. He didn't hear about Aldani, and Cassian just like sits there and shuts up and take it. And all of a sudden, he's like showing his ninja skills.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine.
I'm reminded of a few months back, there was a guy who like chimneyed his way out of a prison in Pennsylvania.
Oh, and yeah. Like the manhunt. It was like a month-long manhunt.
It's like at least like 2 weeks. And, you know, that's like kind of the same thing. Someone who walks into a prison is like, yeah, that would work. That would work. That would work. It's, you know, what really keeps us in the prisons is like, there's two things. One is that the fear of getting caught trying to escape. Because in the US, this is not true in other countries. Other countries, particularly Mexico and Europe, have like a right to escape. And so you aren't punished for trying to escape prison.
Fascinating.
But in the US, it adds to your sentence to when you try to escape.
Well, and you'll be beaten within an inch of your life and probably thrown in solitary.
Those are both generally not legally acceptable punishments, but that still means they happen. Well, however,
I also think about Scandinavian prisons,
yeah,
which you have kind of your own little apartment. The conditions are very humane. It is not necessarily a place that you feel you need to escape from or else you'll die.
Because if there's sort of two classes of criminals broadly, right? There's people who made a either calculated or uncalculated decision, which was a crime, and they committed the crime for various reasons, and they are capable of rehabilitation if they reset their moral compass, and then to align with society's moral compass. And then there's people who are incapable of distinguishing.
Yeah, there's, I just read this study recently for personal reasons, but there is about a 50% rate in American prison populations of antisocial disorder.
Mm.
Like it's a borderline personality disorder. Mm-hmm. And one of the qualities of it is just that without intensive therapy, you may never develop a sense of empathy.
Yeah.
Like you just don't feel like what you do is wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if that's what Cassian is actually representative of someone who just does not have that sense of empathy. Like he knows the things he's doing, but he's also like, I need to escape from this prison. That's the first thing he does. Because other people align with the societal norms. People generally stay on the road. People generally don't do crimes, even when they can get away from them. Over the last couple months, there's been a huge outcry about like shoplifting. And even like CVS and Walgreens are like, we might have kind of blown the horn too loud on that it's not actually a big deal. It works out to be that corporate shrinkage has gone from 1.3 to 1.6% over the last like year.
And inflation has risen 9% over the past year.
Something like that, yeah.
So really, it's been a tiny incremental increase.
Yeah, it works out to be tens of billions of dollars spread out through every corporation of America that has a retail front.
But plenty of people who would benefit from shoplifting don't shoplift, right?
The vast majority of people don't shoplift. But think about all the number of times you've been in the grocery store. There's one harried 17-year-old who is watching 12, 18 self-checkouts And sure, they have a like weight thing, but if you're Cassian thinking and you're like, okay, I'm just gonna take my groceries, I'll put them here, you could shuffle the weight around and make it look like you've bought all the right weight of groceries and then just bounce carrying whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's not like they pat you down, you could fill your pockets.
There's a lot of ways to shoplift. I just don't resonate with the idea that Cassian doesn't have empathy, because the majority of the times that we see Cassian committing crimes, it is provoked by the Empire, or it is against a tyrannical regime.
You're right. It is almost always self-defense. So that said, he is the kind of person who walks into a room, looks at it, and says, okay, here's all the ways out of this room. And then he actually acts on it, and he's willing to act on it because he recognizes that the Empire doesn't care, and that chafes him more than anything. He wants people to care about who he is and what he's about. And the fact that the Empire is not listening to his voice actually makes him deadly angry.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
And most people follow the rules, not for fear of consequences, but for like the possibility of fear of consequences. You were talking earlier about the, what is it? The Skinner box, the mouse.
Mm-hmm. The BF Skinner box, where the mouse presses a lever and sometimes a treat comes out and sometimes it doesn't.
And so invert that and imagine it's punishment now.
Mm.
And so like you have to press this button to get your food, and a random 1% chance it shocks you.
You might just starve yourself to death.
You genuinely might, or you might start sitting there thinking about how to escape.
Yeah, so I've been thinking about Narkeena 5 a lot, because all of a sudden, because of the galactic overreach with the public order resentencing decree, and all of the ways that they're throwing innocent people. So Cassian, if he really were Keef Gurgo, if he really was just walking along the shore, he was an innocent person who got thrown into jail for no reason,
for life.
Right? And the prisoners are saying, yeah, there's a lot of that happening. So the population on Narkeena 5 is not a bunch of hardened criminals. There are some possible criminals in there. There's also a lot of innocent people who are now sentenced to lifelong labor and then death.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has me thinking about morality and tyranny and just like, you either die a physical death on Narkeena 5 or you die a spiritual death and go out of your mind. So there is almost a moral imperative there, and there is no constitution in the galaxy. But if we agree that sentient species have a right to life, then they have a right to escape Narkeena 5.
And we've established that the Empire doesn't believe that sentient species have a right to life.
They don't.
Yeah.
They don't. That's why I've been thinking about all of the past Star Wars examples of all the things that we're seeing in Andor, because previously my biggest heavy hitter of imperial evil was enslaving the Wookiees on Kashyyyk and burning down their forest and ruining their sacred sites. And then we hear about this species that they massacred and recorded.
And uses torture.
And uses a torture device.
Specifically the part we've identified to be the children. We've layered it and altered it slightly.
I just like...
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that prior to Andor coming out, I mean, you could tell me this better than anybody. Did people have a real sense of why the Empire was so bad?
The Empire is in the original trilogy, it's like, of course the Empire is bad. And it starts off with them massacring a family. And then they're just kind of butt monkeys, honestly, for the next couple of episodes. We see them doing bad stuff, but they're never like killing an entire populace for no reason. And even in the prequel era, when we start seeing the Empire being pretty bad through like the initial events, when Darth Vader, the still legs and arms is, well, legs and arm, is walking up to the Jedi Temple to kill the younglings. And that's the baptism of blood that begats the Empire. It's still like, okay, that is a price to pay for order. And sure, it was a false flag operation to blame the Jedi, but order has something to do with it.
Well, and it's just individuals kind of taking individual will and persecuting it on people. It's not an imperial machine like we see here.
Yeah. And so we talked about this in season one of Rebels as well. The original trilogy takes place in the Outer Rim, and it's free from the Empire. It's Empire adjacent. It's Hutt adjacent. If you keep your head down, no one will really bother you, but you don't have any protection of law. It's like the Wild West.
Yeah, it's kind of like in Kenobi.
Yeah.
Until the Inquisitors show up.
But then we jump in Kenobi, in Rebels, in Andor, into the Midrim, into the parts of the galaxy where the Empire has control. And it's so much more horrible.
Wow, I hadn't put those pieces together. We did spend a lot of time on the Outer Rim.
Yeah.
Until we hit this kind of new generation of content.
And we see a little bit of it in Bad Batch season 2 of how the Empire's really cracking down on things. Mm-hmm. And now that they're cracked down and everything's just getting worse and worse, it is pretty surprising. But it does go to show that Luthen's plan is working.
Well, Luthen's idea is correct. His idea about accelerating things. What I was thinking about was just that the nature of tyranny and the nature of totalitarianism is that you close your fist tighter and tighter, and there's never an incentive to loosen your grip. Mm-mm. It's not like you can just suck it up and live out this horrible chapter of your life and expect that things are going to get better. Palpatine has shown time and time again that he will leverage an emergency or a crisis of his own making to acquire more and more power. And now we're seeing the Empire using the Aldani heist as an excuse to make things irrevocably worse for regular citizens everywhere. So this is never going to get better.
Yeah. And
it's like every day that you live in this horrible dystopia is the day with the most freedom you'll ever see again.
Yep. There's a line in the original trilogy: the more you tighten your grip, the more star systems will slip through your fingers.
Ooh.
And that, I think, is what the rebellion is reaching out to do. That's what Ezra's message at the end of Rebels season one is about. He's saying things used to be better. I'm reminding you that things used to be better and the Empire's cracking down on everything. That there's just no hope if we don't fight for it. And that is the message that's starting to resonate with people. And that's the message that Andor is trying to bring up with all of the other prisoners. Nobody's listening. He's like, this is not a time for hopelessness. This is not a time for learned helplessness. This is not a time to sit here and take it. It is a time to reassert our own individual hope.
Is it individual hope or collective hope? Because I don't think Cassian can do it alone. And that's why he's finding allies. And Ezra's message was not, you can do this alone. It was, we need to band together and fight.
The message, I think, is you need to find it within yourselves to join and fight. And that's also going back to the previous episode, because as we went over the plot of this one, this is another one of the Andor episodes where a lot's getting set up and not a ton happens.
I could have definitely used another 10 or 15 minutes of meat.
Yeah. I would have loved a starfighter chase, but
Just like anything. I was so uneasy last night after the torture scenes that I just like couldn't sleep.
Yeah, you know, we stayed up late. So we watch these episodes on Saturday nights in separate rooms. And
that makes it sound so sad.
Well, we're like pausing them separately and taking notes.
Yeah. It's so that we have time to think our thoughts.
But I watched it and I'm like, I need to watch like a palate cleanser and play some video games. So I ended up staying up till midnight because I needed like a lot of time after this because it's setting us up for so much.
I was scrolling through Instagram reels trying to desensitize myself because I was horrified. Mm-hmm. It did not work. It never works. No. I don't know why I ever think it works.
Yeah,
this felt kind of like the couple of episodes we've gotten in Andor that move all the chess pieces around, but there's not necessarily a ton to talk about. I guess this felt like if it was setting up the final four-part arc, maybe I could have used more of a match being lit rather than assembling all of the kindling, if that makes sense.
It does, but we're getting there. And importantly, I think that's why we're talking so much about the previous episode, where we get a really important conversation with Luthen on the same lines as we were discussing as far as like bringing together hope.
Yeah.
And like building that pile of kindling. And maybe that's like also sort of the, gosh, what would it be? It's like the directorial metaphor that's being put in place here of taking the time to let this show breathe.
Yes.
Like, oxygenates the pile of wood that it's stacking up so that like it can build bigger and bigger and bigger so we can get a real send off.
Yeah, this was a critical episode. Every slower episode has been important and entertaining and quality television. I just think most people don't consume Star Wars the way we do because most people don't have a weekly Star Wars podcast. So the episodes like this one, where I would immediately go to the next one. Instead, we sit with it for a while.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a really good point. I'm reminded of occasionally I get served stupid articles, and one of them's like, here's a bunch of things that Gen Xers did that kids today wouldn't recognize. And it's like, watch the same TV as everyone at the same schedule as everyone. And how if there is a show on... And this happened to me when I was growing up. Like, hey, did you catch the episode of Star Trek last night? I'm like,
did you watch Survivor this week?
Survivor didn't come out till I was in college. But yeah, did you watch this episode of Star Trek? And people do that with Survivor now and reality TV shows as well, which is a little bit less because it's not about the plot line, but.
It's the ritual of it.
But I remember watching The Best of Both Worlds, which I believe is the season four cliffhanger finale of Star Trek Next Generation. And it was like 6 months before the next episode came out. And Everyone's like, tell me all about Locutus of Borg. What is going on? I'm horrified. What did they do with Picard? And that's the kind of thing that this style of watching lets us get with Andor. It does let us watch these slower episodes and get more out of them. And I think that is a little bit of a lost art form.
Yeah, I have never been a binge watcher. I like to watch things one at a time, maybe two at a time. But I like to be able to sit and think about it and kind of come up with my own theories. Because otherwise, I will just watch the whole thing through and then go on Reddit and see what smarter people than me thought and never really form an opinion or deeply investigate something. So, gosh, I was thinking about this as I was eating breakfast. I keep coming back to the way that your sister and her husband hated Andor so much because they kind of just rolled right through and were bored and unconvinced. And I think we just have a different framing because we set the stage. Every week, it's Saturday night. We've got our homework to do. We know this is Star Wars. We have Star Wars context. We're like in the right mindset. And then we sit down and we like deeply investigate what's going on. And I think sometimes that's the only way that I could enjoy Star Wars.
I once, back when I was on Reddit, because I haven't been for a long time, read someone say that they taught themselves ancient Greek by retranslating the Iliad. Wow. And that was like their hobby because they were just like an engineer.
What a hobby.
And I'm reminded of how these long form, deep thought hobbies bring such joy and value. And like you're talking about how Instagram bringing you the next thing and Nemec saying 40 atrocities per day. And these prisoners in Narquina 5 with 12 hours to be like, yep, this is all we do is like sleep and eat paste and
think our thoughts. Think
and start like coming up with a plan to escape.
It's kind of an incredible setting to stage a prison break.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
They've kind of set the conditions to foster firebrandism and deep thought.
And they just don't care because they don't expect anyone to ever escape because they just shuffle them around instead of let them free.
Yeah. It's just another, I mean, it's another beautiful note from Andor about how the only way to break out of the prisons that society has built around us is focused attention and collaboration and not being isolated and not being distracted.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that about social media. I think that about our rapidly calcifying conservative government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that actually leads us into the title of next week's episode,
which really?
Is One Way Out.
Ooh.
But before that.
Oh, sorry. I have to take a minute and let my goosebumps kind of like fade back into my skin. Before that.
We got to do some Baywatch.
Okay. It's time for Baywatch. It's time for Baywatch. Okay, Sam, you go first.
Okay. The number one character growth, the number one villain to hero, as opposed to the Deirdre Mero school of thought.
Oh, no.
Is going to be Kino Loy for me.
Really?
First of all, he's acted superbly by Andy Serkis.
He is really very good.
Very good. Going from wanting, like, there's a paternalism about it. He's like, hey, I just want you guys to, like, get done. And then he pulls Olaf. He sees Olaf struggling. He's like, Olaf, you're the shortest of the short timers. Like, you're getting out of here. I'm so happy for you. Mm-hmm. And then he starts breaking under the information. Because as you said, he knows what it was like before he was the floor boss. He knows how long the information takes to get here. He knows how untruthful it is. And when he starts hearing things, he's like, okay, but I also know that the only information that would get carried is real information.
Mm-hmm.
If it's serious enough to get here, if the vibes have shifted in this way. And once he hears it from the doctor, and he talks to the doctor. He knows the doctor from before.
He wants to save Olaf. He wants to get him out of there.
He does. And the doctor's just like, no, massive stroke. This man's already dead. And he breaks. And he is reformed and reforged because he is a tough dude.
Well, he breaks not just for himself, but for Olaf too and for all of the other men. I feel like Kino Loy is hoping that all the prisoners will keep their heads down, work hard, and get out.
Yeah.
And it's like they took the final thread of hope he had left for himself and for everybody that he is in charge of.
And importantly, that is like how he introduced himself, right? He's like, I have 248 days left on my sentence. Your butt is mine.
Yeah.
And Cassian's like, fair. And then Cassian is like, you know what's going on. And Kino does know what's going on. Cassian recognizes that Kino's a smart cookie as well. And so he goes to him. And it's interesting that Cassian and Melshi and the other malcontents are the ones who are closest to Kino because they're like, I need to be here talking to you because you know something. You know more. You know you're the person around which we can bend this thing. Mm-hmm. You are our fulcrum. You are our axis.
Ooh.
Here. Because that is the machine you use to change things, to move things.
Yeah.
Famously, give me a long enough lever and a fulcrum and I'll move the world.
How else do you think the pyramids were built?
Mostly sweat, but
but also levers.
Yeah. And so now we're getting here with that is what is going on with with Kino as well. He's turned into the most important person of the room. And it's been through the coaching of Cassian. But Cassian's sitting here, he's like, I'm just your little spy guy behind the scenes. No one knows who I am. No one knows where I am. Importantly, no one knows where I am.
It is hilarious that the Empire is engaging in a manhunt to track down Cassian Andor, and they already have him.
That is also, importantly, we kind of glossed over this. Cassian turns, like, Partagaz is like, oh, yeah, he was clean shaven. That's what Bix said about Cassian, that he was clean shaven when he came home. That's enough of a link for you to get all the counter Aldani funding. So Cassian is a really important person, enough that the entire galaxy is lit up following his tail. And he's sitting here like, Kino, I need you to level up.
Kino and Cassian seem primed to be very valuable allies to each other.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I'm going to pick Cassian.
Oh, cool.
As my bae.
Nice.
Yeah. I loved last episode seeing him watching.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really impressed with the way that Cassian is willing for people to think really badly about him to stay under the radar. I think it takes a lot of humility to be able to, like, live this lie about yourself, like to let people think that you're stupid and uninformed and untalented and just completely milquetoast so you can fly under the radar. It's really cool to watch Cassian be able to kind of live out that little fantasy so he can do his scheming under the radar.
There's a moment when they're all sitting there at their factory table. Ulaf is struggling.
Yeah.
And Cassian
is like, we need to switch places.
And Jembok is like, bro, why? What's up? And he's like, I'll be faster on this side. You change places. And they all agree and they shift. And Kino comes over and is like, what's going on? And the leader is like, oh, we're shifting.
We're just rebalancing.
And
Kino says, that's a great idea.
And Cassian's like, is this guy's
idea?
It's Jembok's idea. Yeah. He gives it over to a different dude because he wants to keep a low profile.
I think it's so cool. Yeah. I love seeing the gears moving behind Diego Luna's big brown eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what Cassian does. And I know it's going to be scrappy and desperate and terrible, but I want to see him stage a prison break.
Well, that may or may not happen. I'm not going to spoil it for you.
Tune in next week. Hopefully we see Kino and Cassian getting their butts out of there.
So join us next week for season 1, episode 10. We are very near the end of Andor.
What's the name of that one?
One Way Out.
Oh,
gotcha again.
Spicy.
As always, you can follow us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, Facebook. And you can become one of our Patreons and listen to our Spice Run content, which we're having a ton of fun with.
We're having so much fun on Spice Run. This is where we let down our hair a little bit. We swear. We laugh a lot. We are just about to finish up the Tartakovsky Clone Wars recaps that we've been doing. And then we're starting on Visions.
Yeah.
And the Visions are so fun. I can't wait to talk about them.
Yeah. So join us there for that. Memberships start at $3 a month. So
we drop anywhere from 15 to 45 minutes of bonus audio content every week.
Sometimes
so, like,
we go real long.
It's a lot of bang for your buck, y'all.
Not to self-advertise too much, but sometimes we're sitting here, I'm like, wow, that was a long one.
And make sure to send this episode to your favorite firebrand.
Love that. Love that. Yeah. Send it to someone who's listening.
Yeah. We hope they'll come and listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.